This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
So have you ever noticed that all the things that really feel good are a sin? At least according to some of the narrow-minded religions I've been involved in. And what does that mean? What does that mean for Americans who are mostly Christians, Protestants, who are starting, adolescent Americans are starting to have all these feelings and sensations in their bodies, and then they go to church and they learn that it's wrong, that they're going to burn in hell because of what they're feeling. Do you think this might make a little bit of a division between the self and your sense of sacredness? So we're thinking about that. We're thinking about what it means to have a divergent sexuality or just any sexuality at all, and also be a sacred, spiritual, God-loving being, you know, loving each other, loving connection, all that stuff. And the God Project, the whole idea, doing surveys, actually, your goal is to have thousands of people answer this God Project survey.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. This is Jason Wyman. He works at Outlook Theater, and he's co-director of the Reviving Spirits Project that is an offshoot of the God Project.
Yes, it is. That is exactly right.
So you can take the God Project survey. It's both on the OutlookTheater.org website.
Correct.
And I did post it on my website.
Woo!
Yes, because, I mean, you're not exactly at your goal of 1,000 people taking the survey yet, but you had a lot of people take it all in 1 week.
Yeah, we had approximately, when we launched it last year, we had approximately 200 people from around the world take it in one week.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty amazing. And we only did, like I said, limited outreach originally through Facebook.
Yeah.
I love Facebook,
I
by the way.
So, yeah, let's talk about the ways in which the answers were both wildly divergent and had some commonalities, because that's an interesting thing about sexuality and spirituality, that there's so much difference and that sort of thing. But also, your co-director, Anthony Julius Williams, welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, and your goal is to, like, create art that is socially transformative.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's one of the things that brought you to this project.
Absolutely. You know, religion is so powerful and has, you know, such influence over people. You know, gays and lesbians have traditionally been the backbones of churches and synagogues and, other religions. I wanted to create environments for people to be able to talk about these issues and express themselves and bring all of themselves to wherever they're at, so that if you're lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, whatever, and you're also spiritual, you can talk about all those things all at once.
Cool. Our token straight guy is Jess.
What's going on?
Hey. We are talking about sexuality, spirituality, and waving your freak flag in the presence of God tonight. Let's talk about the relationship between sexuality and spirituality, because for some people, because sex is a sin, it seems like the furthest from religion that you can get.
Right.
How could they possibly be connected?
I truly think they're one and the same. Granted, this is a rather mystical way of looking at the universe, but I think the basic underlying feeling of the universe is bliss. It's basically
Amen.
Orgasm. and sex, you know, is one way of tapping into that bliss. But religion or spirituality is also, you know, another way of tapping into that bliss. And I'm like, I don't see why we should be keeping those things separate.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that that's the big thing with, I mean, sex is about connection and the other people and, of course, your own sensations. And it can be about presence in the moment. I mean, you're not going to feel anything unless you're being present in the moment with the sensations on your body.
Right.
You know, and we do create this, like, moment of divinity. That's what Tantra is all about. You know, the divine beloved is always whatever partner is in front of you in the moment. You
right.
know, and of course, you're always your own divine beloved. And isn't that a special relationship?
Right.
I think that there, one of the words that I wanted to draw out that I heard was really this word around intimacy. And I think that there is a shared core around sexuality and spirituality that is specifically about cultivating intimacy. And I think when we try to divorce the sexuality from spirituality, we are getting further and further away from that intimacy. And one of the things that we're noticing, especially in things like the Occupy movement and through other forms of expression, Occupy or the decolonized movement, however you want to word it, is that there is this intense need to be in community, an intimate community with one another. And we're finding these different ways in which those intimate communities are popping up, whether it's through these campouts that are happening or were happening at Justin Herman Plaza, and really trying to figure out how are we intimately working on our differences together versus figuring out ways in which to work against one another. And I think this false notion of divorce between spirituality and sexuality is what is actually now resulting in these autonomous movements to try to spark this intimate moment and this intimacy in these new ways.
Well, and the horrible disconnection we have between what's good and what's important in our culture, which seems to be what's profitable right now. You know, like there's this huge disconnection between people, you know, between ourselves and what we are and our bodies and what we think we're supposed to look like. You know, we have kind of these big schisms between what is and then what's really good.
Monica, you've mentioned the words connection and disconnection. And I'm reminded that the word religion comes from, I believe, the Latin religare, which is to connect.
Right.
Yeah, people want that connection. And they traditionally they found it through their spiritual practices, through their religious
communities, churches.
Yes, and certainly you know, so-called sexual minorities, you know, are wanting to participate in that that type of connection and in those communities.
Of course.
So the God Project, Reviving Spirits, is about creating pathways for people to acknowledge their need for a connection, their need for intimacy, and building communities around that and moving forward and speaking about it.
Right. So you're planning on taking, it was a survey and then became a workshop and then it's like performance art. And then you're taking the Reviving Spirits and taking the God Project and bringing it to LGBTQ centers, churches. You're trying to take it.
Yeah, we're trying to take, we're actually, you know, the way to think about it is, you know, the God Project was really our development, our pre-development cycle. And so it was about 18 months, as you mentioned, it was a survey, it was workshops, it was some performance art, it was a lot of our own internal questions and trying to figure out partnerships and work. And then what we realized is that, you know, we were trying to fit all of this into a single narrative. And the problem with this conversation,
that seems easy.
It seems so easy to just make one story.
Yeah.
And it's so not.
You can't.
And, you know, this project lends itself to multiple stories and multiple ways of expression and multiple ways in which these intersections manifest themselves in people in community with one another. And so Reviving Spirits is about this opportunity of kind of we have a call for artists. Specifically, we're going to be casting 8 different artists from different disciplines. We really want photographers and filmmakers and performers and dancers and choreographers and media makers and everyone applying to this, because we want it to be an interdisciplinary piece and an interdisciplinary cast. And then taking and working with that cast using performance techniques to go back out into our communities and really engage performatively and through a variety of different places, this conversation and opening this dialogue and not allowing it to be reduced to a single narrative at all.
Right. Because the LGBT community is extremely diverse and we're wanting to access, you know, that full diversity. You know, we want white people, we want Asian people, we want Latins, we want Native Americans, we want black people, and we want all the different religious traditions and non-religious traditions or non-faith traditions to be involved as well. So whether you're Christian or Buddhist or practice a pagan religion.
Or atheist.
Yes, or atheist.
Or transgender.
Yeah. We want the full array of dialogues around beliefs to be represented in the project.
Because not only do you talk about belief and faith in God and religion, but you also talk about atheism and existentialism and every kind of ism.
Yeah, it was really interesting when we got, I personally, I tried being an atheist and it just didn't work. I just I don't know why it didn't work. It just,
you're like,
I
was truth. Can there be truth? I don't know.
I'm not exactly
it
sure.
It just doesn't look like that in this world. It's so many different things that are true at the same time. And you're like, that's a pretty funny joke. Whatever it is.
Yeah. And when we got the survey back, I was really impressed with the amount of atheists that actually responded to our survey, considering the fact that the survey was titled The God Project.
But did you create that name, or what was happening for you?
Well, we had created the name The God Project. Originally, the people that were involved in the creation of this project were Outlook co-founders Lynn Johnson and Rebecca Schultz, and then Marissa Ray was also involved, and then myself. Marissa's in studio with us as well. Mm-hmm. And so the four of us were like, how are we really going to figure out how we're what was the title? What are we doing? Mm-hmm. We knew that we wanted to talk around faith. And we just thought by calling it The God Project, it was kind of a bold name. Mm-hmm. And people.
Lots of juice.
Yes. And. And we capitalized God, so it was capital G-O-D. We did that so that it wasn't, you know, all lowercase, which through language means something, or it wasn't just a capital G, which means something. So we actually were very particular in capitalizing the entire word so that we can kind of spark a dialogue, but at the same time not be beholden to one ideology.
Right. You know, certainly one of the motivations for me being involved in this project is... you know, Christian homophobia,
yeah,
you know,
it's
and
deal.
Wanting, you know, wanting to address that. That's a very big concern for the lesbian and gay community. But I am actually someone who practices Santeria, which is a latter-day expression of traditional African religion, you know, branded pagan, by people who aren't in the faith. And so I didn't necessarily want to be involved in a project that was only, you know, about, you know, Christianity and the dialogues, you know, around that. I wanted to be in a project that was going to acknowledge other ways, you know, of believing. You know, part of what I love about my spiritual practice is how it's, you know, very specifically tied into nature and how it is welcoming of sexual minorities.
Right.
There are certain kind of hang-ups that you don't necessarily find in Santeria that are typical of Christianity. And so
the
I'm
big
very...
big split between self and body.
Exactly. Self and nature.
Yeah.
You know, all of that.
Yeah, dominion over all the creatures.
Yeah, definitely. I think within Santeria, there's just sort of a natural acceptance that people are sexual beings. One of the Orishas, which is sort of one of the deities in Santeria, is Oshun, who's known for being very beautiful and sexual, and also female. I might add, there's a a lot of respect for the divine feminine, in this religion. And it was really important to me to be part of a project that that if it was going to deal with this subject of religion and sexuality, that it be about multiple narratives, multiple perspectives, and really be embracing of, you know, the full diversity or array of beliefs, you know, around the subject.
Well, how do you do that? How do you encourage pluralism while also trying to make stories? You know what I mean? You have so many narratives and things that you want to pull. How do you do that and stay coherent?
Well, one of the things that we did, one of the interesting pieces to me, at least, that we did, and why we want more survey respondents, is we asked four different belief statements. So we asked one belief statement around rules. We asked one belief statement around God or no God. We asked one around sexual orientation, and then we asked one around gender. And then we just have a wide open field that says, tell us your story. Literally, that's it. And what I've been amazed is just the responsiveness that I've gotten from people that I don't even know, who just literally spill their heart out in wanting to tell their story. And so one of the things that we did with that is we actually combed through all of that, and we started creating some poetry, composed poetry, specifically only from the responses in the survey. So there isn't, you know, there's a little bit of artistic license in terms of making sure that verb tense matches,
sure.
You know what I'm saying, or repeating a particular phrase for artistic merit. But for the most part, all of those words come directly from the God Project. And you start seeing
other people's responses.
Exactly. And how those responses interact with one another and create this kind of depth and layering specifically to a story so that it isn't necessarily tied to a particular narrative. That's one example. We also do workshops, which I think is another way to kind of allow multiple voices and stories to come up and not forcing them to necessarily match. Just to creating a safe and risky enough environment for people. It's a really dynamic tension to create safety and risk. So trying to create an environment like that so that people can really feel like, oh, I'm going to try on someone else's perspective, and then I'm going to retreat into my own story, and I'm just going to let my own story be my own story for right now. And then now, wow, I heard Anthony share his piece. I'm going to try that on for just a second, and I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to try moving over to where Anthony is standing in the room. And it's been amazing to kind of see in these workshops how people literally physically take up space and move in the room as they're hearing other people's stories and trying on other people's perspectives.
Yeah. I mean, the way we've structured this is so that people can acknowledge that there are, you know, continuums, you know, of belief, of gender, of sexuality, of belief. You know, there are flows. It's not like you're expected just to be in, you know, one little corner all the time and just rigidly defined in this one little, you know, area of life or of belief. You can literally, you know, move around, try on different beliefs and attitudes, and realize that you're part of a rainbow spectrum.
Right. Well, that everyone can change their mind,
right,
and they can also like see someone else's point of view. And it's, I think it's what's nice is that then you're able to open up a little bit and be like, oh, well, even though I am devoutly Christian and I believe that this sort of thing is wrong or whatever I believe, you know, something from the Bible perhaps, that I'm able to see, oh, well, this person isn't hurting anyone and they're actually trying to help the world be more beautiful and more loving and that sort of thing, so that they can honor the perspective. Because I think in some sense, we're all like determining reality. Mm. We're all gods. We're all sacred, you know, and I think that it's important to recognize different perspectives. And also, you know, isn't it kind of fun that we get to try out different ones, you know?
Yeah, we had this one woman.
Kind of the fun thing of being an actor, right?
Exactly.
We had this one woman actually respond to the survey, and her responses were, I believe there's only one God. I believe there is rules to live your life by, which can be found through a text. I believe there is only one sexual orientation, heterosexuality, and I believe there are only two biological sexes, which are the same as gender.
Yes.
And then when we got to tell us your story, the story that she told was how she is a devout Christian, and how she really believes homosexuality is a sin, and that we really are going to hell, and here's where the nuance comes in, and I would never vote against your civil rights.
That's nice.
And, I mean, really, it's fascinating. You don't hear that in any kind of mainstream media, where people are able to say, this really truly is my religious or spiritual belief and my religious and spiritual expression. And at the same time, I have enough wherewithal and understanding to be able to say, I'm not going to be voting against gay marriage or against these other rights that people really truly need and should have.
Well, it's your civil right.
Yes.
Right? It's nice that other people can recognize that. Yay! Did you guys hear about the church in Chicago that brought the big pride parade in Chicago? Instead of having churches that were protesting the parade, they're like, I'm sorry that you've been discriminated against. We're sorry about the homophobia. We're sorry about the Bible thumping. We're sorry for how the... And they wore t-shirts that said, I'm sorry. And then everyone in the parade came and hugged them, and the pictures are beautiful.
The pictures are gorgeous.
I remember a few years back, my best friend back in New York City was watching the gay pride parade and was noticing that the single largest contingent was actually the religious contingent. You know, we're so
used. That's kind of cool in a way.
It's very cool, actually.
Because you're really getting them.
Well, because we're used to thinking of, you know, lesbian and gay people as being somehow, you know, anti-Christian or anti-religious.
Right.
And it's just not true. So many, you know, gays and lesbians and transgenders are deeply religious or deeply spiritual, you know, do actively think, you know, about God and spirituality. And it's a major part of our lives. You know, let's come out about that. Mm-hmm. And politically, you know, speaking, so many people, you know, organize their lives, you know, around their churches, their synagogues, their spirituality. Politically, in order to defend, you know, lesbian and gay rights, we really should be reaching out, you know, to those communities and talking with them, dialoguing with them, and making those communities more affirming, you know, of our sexuality, simply so that we can have the rights that we want to enjoy in this society.
And our gender expression. And I think, you know, I really want to make sure, you know, one of the things that we're looking at in Reviving Spirits really is also gender expression. You know,
right.
We're talking a little bit here around spirituality and sexuality, and I just really want to make sure that we also really honor trans, gender queer, that there is a divinity of gender.
Absolutely.
In some religions, there really is.
Yes, there is. You know?
There's that third spirit, you know. Exactly.
Yes. Absolutely.
There's a lot of traditions that really honor that and make it sacred.
Two spirits.
Even exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, certainly research that. There are so many perspectives on this planet. It's so important to honor them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the nuances for us at Outlook, mm-hmm. you know, is we have been doing a lot of exploration around words. You know, I'm a writer more than I am a performer. And so words are really have always been really, really important to me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've really been exploring is, you know, talking about, you know, when we talk about the project, you know, it's reviving spirits. It's not reviving spirit.
Right.
You know, when we talk about the LGBTQIA communities, we're talking about communities and not community. I think a lot of times, you know, in our own language, we try to honor pluralism, and then we use something like the LGBT community.
Right.
Well, that isn't plural. That is, by the nature of the word community, it is singular.
Right.
And so for us, we've been really careful about the nuance of even our own language mm-hmm. and, you know, being able to say there are many communities, and that's perfectly wonderful and needs to be celebrated mm-hmm. and doesn't need to come to consensus.
Right.
And, you know, conflict is sometimes good and sometimes healthy. And we need to create space for that to happen in a healthy, safe environment that also honors ancestry and humility and compassion and humor. You know, humor is a big deal, you know, being able to laugh at ourselves, you know, and laugh at, you know, there's been a lot of pain that's been, you know, I came out when I was in seminary to be a priest.
Wow.
I know. And I would literally get knocks on my door at like 3 in the morning from seminarians and priests who would be asking me for blowjobs or, I mean, literally,
crazy.
they would literally knock on my door and they'd be like, would you be willing to give me a blowjob tonight?
Proof at last.
Wow.
I know. It's fantastic. And then I would wake up and I would have to go to morning prayer at 6 a.m. And I'd be walking down the aisle in morning prayer and the same people that had knocked on my door at 3 a.m. were the same people that were screaming or whispering faggot at me as I was walking down the aisle to morning prayer.
Hi!
Wow.
What is wrong with you people?
Crazy.
Well, that's the thing, the big separation between desire and like what's right. Like what keeps you up in the middle of the night? What sort of thoughts are you thinking? Are you at war with your sexuality and your pleasure? Or do you think, oh, you know, I feel this way. It must be good.
Yeah.
Crazy. The humanity. Poor baby.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, you know, it was, to be honest, it was incredibly hurtful and it was really hurtful. And I couldn't really talk about
the
it for many years.
Right.
Now I can laugh at it. And there's a certain levity that, you know, I can tell this story. And I actually performed this story at a drag show once and the entire audience was like, and I just had to say, you can laugh.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't take this story too seriously any longer. Like, it's really flipping funny. Like, yes, it's tragic, but there's comedy in tragedy.
Right.
Right. Well, and you're not in seminary anymore.
No, and I've moved on, and, you know,
yeah.
That was many, like 17 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
I do think laughter and levity are very important, but I think we should also, you know, recognize grief, acknowledge grief, you know, and sadness. So many people, you know, want reconciliation with their families, you know, with their churches, you know, with their communities, and spiritually. spirituality exists to, you know, address that need.
Forgiveness.
Yes, of course.
Hello.
Of course. You know, certainly as a, you know, a Black gay man, I practice Santeria. You know, I've left my Catholicism behind, but I do feel compelled to address, you know, the homophobia in the Black church, which is a, you know, a major source of pain for, you know, many Black gay people, and how ironic it is to have a, you know, Black gay pastor railing against homosexuality when half the people in the choir, are lesbian and gay, and how life-threatening it has actually become, you know, for the Black communities.
Oh,
we have a situation where almost half of all new HIV-positive people are African-American, and, you know, the Black church is the only institution that, you know, the Black community really controls. So, you know, the Black church really needs to be pulling its weight, you know, on informing people that, hey, you need to go out and you need to get tested. You need to know your HIV status so that you can know, you know, what you want to do and with whom when it comes time to get busy, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that to say that it's a spiritual judgment, that a germ is a spiritual judgment, like conflates like the whole war between sacredness and self. You know, like it's like, oh, you're dirty. You've done something wrong. A germ is going to get on you if it can. You know, it's not a moral judgment.
Right.
And then some people say, oh, well, you can only get that if you're bad, which is, by the way, not true.
Just not true.
And in addition to the fact there's nothing wrong with having sex.
Right.
There's not anything wrong with having sex. I mean, of course, you can have more and less healthy sex, and that's you can decide that, you know, you can decide what makes it more and less healthy and feels good to you, you know, and of course many people can give you information in condoms or whatever it takes,
right?
But you know, it's just hard because sometimes the church actually makes the situation worse, like the Catholic Church in South Africa not recognizing that condoms are important in terms of preventing the spread of HIV.
Right. We need to turn that situation around.
Yeah.
This is why it's so critically important that we see that sexuality and spirituality are the same thing. How could they not be? They're both happening through people.
Right.
You know, we're not just sexual one minute and spiritual another. We're sexual all the time. We're spiritual, you know, all the time.
Well,
it's all you know what I mean.
No, I do.
I mean, we really need to take a holistic, approach to this. And again, it just keeps coming back to connection.
Right. Well, you can't get more people without having more sex. So if God really did create the universe, he created these beings who can't make more of them without having sex. So, and many people say he said, fruitful and multiply. So sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Amen.
Actually, you know, he wouldn't have given us such amazing genitals to, like, you know, rub on other people. I mean, or on ourselves, depending on what you're into. And that's totally okay.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about your work at JFK University. Your project was really interesting, deserves to be mentioned, slavery and the relationship to now mass incarceration.
Yeah.
The prison industrial complex.
Yeah. Yes, I recently got my Master of Fine Arts degree in Performance Art from John F. Kennedy University. I was part of the Arts and Consciousness program, which takes a very holistic and spiritual approach to the arts.
Really spiritual? In what way?
Recognizing that performance ultimately has its roots in shamanism.
Ooh, cool.
Yes. So... there were definitely, I used interactive ritual to be part of the show that I did. It was called Blood is Mere Decoration, a ritual for liberation. And so I combined interactive ritual with electronic music, buto dance, and video projections to tell a story about mass incarceration.
Right.
And basically deliver the message that it's mass incarceration is basically the new slavery.
Right.
Yeah, we have 2.2 million people in American jails, more than any country on Earth. Both.
So many people just live in prison.
Yes, yes.
And work in prison.
Yes, for free.
Yeah. I mean, I think they get something like pennies.
Pennies on the hour.
For hour. Literally. Yeah. And it's really sick because, and especially when you look at the way people are put into prison, there are more minorities in prison than white people. And that's and you look at the crimes that are committed and crimes that are charged.
Yes.
And it's a much higher incarceration rate for people.
Yeah. It's something like 40% of all prisoners are African American. 30%, you know, are Latino.
Right.
It's a very suspicious situation.
Right.
Less than 10% of them are in there for violent crimes.
Mm.
More than 25% are in there for drug crimes.
Right.
And you know, why do people want to smoke marijuana?
Because it's fun.
Same reason they want to have sex.
And the same reason they're sitting
in church. And maybe
they're
stressed out. They want to
relax.
You know,
they want to know bliss.
Know.
They want to know connection.
Right.
It's, you know, they want to feel good.
Right. Well, any drugs are about maybe escaping, you know, some kind of difficult present reality, depending on whether or not you're using it that way. Could mm-hmm. be. And then, you know, dopamine and serotonin, all of those things are pleasure chemicals and things that, I mean, human beings want to be happy. And I think that, you know, things like victimless crimes, there's a lot of drug crimes and prostitution, that if there's no victim, why are we spending so much time and money putting these people in prison if there's really no victims, when there are victims that we could, like, we could protect people, victims
yeah.
of domestic violence, we could protect...
I think there's a lot
victims of financial fraud.
Yeah, people, right. when you break into your car, do the police care? No.
Right. You know, I think there's a lot of black and white thinking that's going on. There's
right.
a lot of crime and punishment thinking that's going on.
Right.
There's a lot of hellfire and brimstone mm-hmm. kind of thinking that's going on.
There's a lot of anti-poverty thinking going on. Specifically, when we talk about this, you know, why haven't bankers from Wall Street been tried yet, really?
Yeah.
In collapsing an entire market, you know? I mean, this is to perpetuate poverty and to perpetuate
right.
poverty among certain ethnicities and certain groups of people
right.
in order to keep them down, basically.
Well, they're easier to work cheaply when you have that.
That's a political perspective, but I think there's also spiritual perspectives to, you know, to all this. You know, why are so many people afraid, you know, of each other?
Right.
You know, why can't we love each other? For me, spirituality is basically about, you know, unconditional love, which I guess means that all that Sunday school, you know, did penetrate my consciousness. But, you know, that's what Jesus represents, right?
Right.
That was the revolutionary message, unconditional love. And here we are 2000 later, and that message is still revolutionary.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's interesting how we've been forgiven and yet we're still feeling like sinners and
right.
disconnected and judgmental. And I mean, of course, it's always a process. You know, sometimes
right.
the present moment is something that you're like, I can really get into this. And then sometimes it's not that fun. But I mean, it's about, you know, presence in the moment and connection. Let's talk about some of the intersections, like the commonalities in the surveys.
Yeah.
I'd really like to hear about what people were saying that, you know, you had, what, 200 respondents that first week?
Yes, we did. We had 200 people. Can I read a quick poem?
Please, yes, please.
It's really short. It's called In This Moment, and it's a composed poem of responses from the God Project. In this moment, I'm unsure about declaring my personal beliefs. In this moment, I love G-D. I love the book. In this moment, I want to become more like the God I believe in, a God of compassion, of unconditional love, a God who takes the side of those who are forgotten, abused, and oppressed. In this moment, I believe in heterosexuality only. In this moment, my God is beyond gender, is not an old white man with a beard, is beyond any human category or box we try to use to contain God. In this moment, I am a bisexual transgender atheist. In this moment, I have no real idea. In this moment, we are in the position of a little child entering a huge library filled with books in many languages. In this moment, I am sad at how the Torah is misunderstood and manipulated for negative things or even to impose judgment, shame, or guilt. In this moment, I realize that labels are only markers that obscure some profound experiences. In this moment, I have no right to judge. In this moment, I look like a normal woman. In this moment, only God can choose. In this moment, the challenges we face as spiritual beings in a physical world are full of contradictions.
Wow.
What I love about that is so many of those things didn't come out of my survey at all, but I feel like a couple of them, that wasn't the words that I chose, but it was so similar to what I thought. You know what I mean? Like, so even though I don't really believe in any particular religion or whatever, you know, I think that we are kind of experiencing some similar beliefs about sex and God and religion and stuff.
Yeah. And to me, that was the beautiful thing. You know, when you start composing this kind of poetry or this kind of performance specifically around cutting and pasting basically mm-hmm. pieces of text, you really start seeing just really how interconnected these things really are. Even the atheists have a dogma, you know, mm-hmm. even in the responses that we got from atheists, I read them and I was like, there is the same kind of zealotry mm-hmm. in some of these atheist responses that I'm reading in some of the Christian responses.
Could you say more about that, like dogma and zealousness?
So
I think it's important.
Yeah. For me, it was, you know, there is no such thing as God, and being hard and fast
right?
about
right.
believing that there is no God mm-hmm. and reading that and being like, but there are so many, like, so what?
Right.
In all honesty, so what if there is or there isn't?
Right.
If someone is still in touch with the divine humanism, mm-hmm. then fine. Like, so you call it God, you don't call it God. You know, specifically in some of the other atheist responses, it was, the only thing that is real is that which can be perceived.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
All right?
Wow.
And the use of logic huh. within that. I was recently at a conversation specifically around shamanism and consciousness at the Happiness Institute. I can't remember the woman's name at this moment.
Oh, I do. It's Missy Galore.
No, it was not.
Not Missy Galore.
No, it was not Missy Galore.
Oh, darn.
Dang.
She did do some stuff around. She's a shamanatrix.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So at the Happiness Institute.
At the Happiness
anyway.
Institute.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There was this amazing speaker. And gosh, I'm so bad at not remembering her name.
Okay.
But the thing that really got to me in her conversation was really all of this stuff around perception and how, you know, the truth, the Western truth and scientific truth is really more about observation than it is about perceiving the physical world.
Right.
And when you go into perceiving the physical world in the way that traditional shamanistic cultures have done, and I mean, even the word shaman is a really, I mean, it's a really kind of Western word specifically
right.
that's been placed on other religions that would never call themselves shamanistic.
Right.
But even there, they understand the whole idea of being able to perceive beyond self. And there are, one of the stories that was shared is that there's this Polynesian, there was this Polynesian culture way, way back, I want to say 1,000 years ago, that had actually mapped out the entire Pacific Ocean before any Westerner did, simply by use of their imagination.
Right.
Wow.
And being able to sit and go beyond the horizon right. and being able to literally perceive, being able to smell and being able to say, wow, that smell takes me here and now I can go beyond here.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that it's really interesting when you read these things and when you read specifically around these atheist, some, I'm not going to say all, some of these responses of atheists, it was very much like, only facts exist.
Right.
Truth is facts.
And zealousness.
And zealous, you know.
Right. Yeah, and I've certainly seen
around
yeah.
that.
I've certainly seen my share of kind of, you know, self-righteous sort of infecting the mm-hmm. queer performance arts scene. I once organized a night of performance art in collaboration with a bunch of gay writers, and our honored guest showed up, and basically his piece was about pissing on a Bible.
Did he tell you that in advance?
No, he did not. So you can imagine my surprise.
Oh, yes. You should tell me if you're going to pee on the floor.
Yeah.
I need a tarp. Ew.
Really?
Yeah.
So, you know, half the audience loved the piece because it was really well performed and did have, you know, quite a bit to say. But the other half, you know, really hated it and thought it went too far. And it raises a lot of questions like, well, if pissing on a Bible is okay, is, you know, painting a swastika in a synagogue, you know, okay? Where is the dividing line here? Granted, you know, some Christian churches, some Christian pastors, not all of them have expressed hatred towards the LGBT communities. But, you know, what about those that haven't? What about those that, you know, love us? Where is the recognition of those people? And where is the recognition of, you know, LGBT communities who actually consider themselves, you know, to be Christian? You know, where do they fit into this pissing on the Bible, you know, kind of paradigm?
And they're like, I don't think I do, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, not that it's not an expression and an artistic, maybe it's an artistic expression. Certainly, really famous guy did the Marilyn's, you know,
Warhol.
He pissed on things. That was art. It's in the MoMA.
It's not like, you know, I'm against sacrilegious, you know,
expressions.
Art, but it's about kind of how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, is there ambiguity? You know, is there humor? Is there any love in there, you know, somewhere?
Any detail orientedness?
Yes.
Like maybe consensualness and put down a tarp. Hello.
Exactly. And a willingness to be in dialogue with people who may not, you know, understand you.
Right. Instead of just being like,
right. Exactly.
Or just pushing people away because they so don't get it that it's like, he pissed on the Bible, I'm out.
Right.
So that's coming, I think, probably from some serious woundedness.
Exactly.
On the part of the performer or the people in the queer community or the people in the kinky community. I mean, there's so many different kinds of divergent sexualities.
Right.
Right. That are excluded by most spiritual practices.
Right.
Or, you know, normal ideas, whatever
ideas
are normal.
Spirituality is one of those places that you go to do your healing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the main reasons people do believe in God or...
I think one of the, you know, when we're talking about divergent sexualities, you know, one of the things for me that comes up too is, you know, those that identify as asexual.
Yes.
You know, I had this really interesting conversation with a friend of mine and, you know, she has a friend that's asexual. And one of the things that the way in which he's moved in the world is by saying that he's taken a vow of celibacy. And
cool.
that is the only way that people can understand his own identity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's not really a vow.
Right.
I just don't have these same attractions,
right.
You know?
Right.
But the only way that people can understand me is if I put it in this spiritual context of a vow of celibacy. So,
right.
So, I mean, I just, you know, there's so much nuance and there's so much intersectionality between sexuality and spirituality and gender identity and expression.
The whole topic is just so juicy.
Yeah, it really is.
That's why I'm so excited about it. There's just so many different angles and, you know, ways of being connected to it.
And what I love about it too is that we're not, like I said earlier, we're not trying to reduce this down to a single narrative. You know, we're not trying to make this about a Christian story or about a Buddhist story or about one particular story, you know, because there's been things that have done that. Do you know what I'm saying? There have been things that have, you know, specifically tried to take a look at, you know, there's Eight, which is the more, which is a new play by Dustin Lance Black about the Mormon, about Prop 8 and kind of the Mormon church's involvement within that. And all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so there's definitely these points in time where we have these things that are a little bit more convergent, a little bit more single narrative. You know, we see some of these expressions coming in, you know, from my experience in doing some of the community organizing side of this work, you know, the world of interfaith specifically has been more about Judeo-Christian, Muslim, Buddhism, maybe Hinduism.
Right.
You know, it's not about all of these other like micro ways in which we show up or express ourselves. There is definitely an institutional interfaith movement, which does not necessarily do very well at engaging these other kinds of expressions or ways in which people show up.
Right.
And so for me, you know, it's like, how do we really create that space?
Yeah, and there are many, many people who are kind of inventing their own religions or their own practice. You know, they have some kind of altar, you know, set up, you know, in their bedroom or whatever. They may believe in ancestor worship, or they may be, you know, kind of worshiping, you know, ancient gods that, you know, aren't recognized by mainstream religions. There are so many different ways that people are accessing, you know, spirituality. But, you know, I also want to make the point is that sometimes you just mention the word spirituality and people are like, oh, I'm out of here because that's too woo-woo. You know, it just doesn't mean anything to me. It's, you know, it's not relevant to me. And I want to make the point that, you know, at least with shamanism, which a lot of people think of as being too woo-woo, shamanism was always about being practical. It was always about accessing power through, you know, through visions of healing or being able to, you know, conduct, you know, the animal hunts, you know.
Making people believe you.
Or whatever.
You're like, look, I'm shaking this gourd. It's very sensational, you know.
But it was really about doing practical things that, that improved the health and well-being, the healing of the community. So it's not just about, you know, sticking your head in the clouds. It's about actually protecting people and maybe and making their lives better.
Let's talk a little bit about the connection between sexuality, creativity, and spirituality. Because shamanism is kind of in there somewhere.
Right.
You know, it's all about accessing power. How do we access power? How do we, what is there, a brain state that has to do with power and creativity and some other connection? Or are we, like, what's the mind about? I think there's a lot, there's some poking you can do in this.
There's so many ways of thinking about it. It all has to do with accessing inner power. I keep coming back to that word, you know, power. It's about putting yourself in a certain kind of mind state where you have belief in yourself and your power to communicate, your power to give something or bestow something, you know, to another person. It's about being able to forge the connections, and those connections enable you to move yourself forward and the community forward. It's about overcoming fear. We're so conditioned to be so fearful,
retract, and then you don't want to connect, and you don't want to make anything, and you don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, but also it's about knowing what your needs are, knowing what other people's needs are. Sexuality, spirituality, creativity. It's those three things are about all of those things.
Well, and I think about, especially with fear, as people say, "Oh, well, you know, that's you're the other, you know, the other people." They're saying, oh, well, you aren't a straight person. You're not a heteronormative, like you're not a normally gendered person. You're not a man or a female. And I think that people start to think, oh, well, out of fear, out of lack of the ability to connect, they start making these big walls and saying, oh, well, I can't be your friend. I can't help you. I can't. And I think that there's so many ways that we live in a manufactured scarcity. Like, I don't think there's really not enough. In my opinion, we could feed everyone. We just make some people more worthy.
Amen. I mean, how can it be that here we are in 2012 and some people don't have a roof over their head?
And we're throwing away
so much food.
Some
people don't have enough food to eat. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's because we live in a society where, you know, the most fundamental value is money.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we build a society where the most fundamental value is love?
I'm with you.
That's what spirituality, sexuality, creativity is all about. I mean, come on. We are way past overdue for building this society based on love. I mean, let's get with the program. We've got the technology. We've got the money. You know, we've got the smarts. I mean, come on. Let's just get real and start doing it.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I think I'm at a loss because it's so, like, to me, it's just so basic. I always get shocked when I share something with someone around just being intentional or, you know, sitting around and saying, you can approach the problem a little bit differently. All you have to do is just answer the question yet.
Right.
Just let the question be for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still always amazed at how radical that is.
Right.
Because, you know, for myself, I do that daily, you know?
Right.
I mean, I have a very rich creative life. I write almost every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I find ways in which to be able to express myself in a variety of different ways. Does it pay? No. I mean, really, I mean, if we're going to get into the economics
does,
of this,
actually, but...
does it economically and financially pay? It doesn't necessarily pay. I mean, I've in all honesty, I've never been this broke in my entire life.
Right.
I've also never been happier in my entire life, and I've never.
Strange how that works.
It is, and I've never felt as alive and as present in the moment as I have within this last year of being as
broke
as I have been.
I want to bring up the central question: what do you want? What do I want?
Meaning?
What do you want? That's the central question, because whether it's spirituality or sexuality or creativity, there are so many confused people out there who are just so deathly afraid of really naming what it is that they, you know, what they want. They just don't know.
Well, and they're told that anything that you want is bad.
Right.
It can't be good for you if it feels this good. Or what's that one, that saying about pleasure? It must be bad for you if it feels good.
Right.
It's really the relationship between the body and pleasure is so so negative.
And you even see it being played out in politics right now, specifically with the Faith Breakfast, which is fairly controversial considering who the sponsors of the faith, the National Prayer Breakfast, happens to be. But, you know, Obama was there. Obama was talking. He talked about being a Christian. He talked about being compassionate for those that are less fortunate than us. He talked specifically, there's a particular line in the Bible that I'm going to butcher, but for those who have been given much, much is expected of them. And he used that line from the Bible. And then the Republicans went and started questioning his Christianity.
Oh, hilarious.
And then, you know, people like Rick Santorum is sitting there and talking about how the free market needs to actually dictate healthcare because he believes, you know, that healthcare isn't a right.
Right.
And yet he is the one that's running on this really, really, really Christianist philosophy.
Right.
And yet they're lambasting Obama, saying, I don't really believe that you're a Christian, you know, and yet he's the one that's actually preaching what actually Jesus said.
Yeah, so,
I
mean, practicing what he preaches.
We're in this really weird place, politically, spiritually, religiously, morally. Mm-hmm. We're in this kind of moral crisis in trying to figure out exactly what do we value. Money and capitalism has been the driving morality of this country, regardless of whether that is expressed through Christianity or not.
Right.
Capitalism has been the driving morality of this country. And now we're in this place of people are finally saying, well, screw that.
Right.
There has to be a new morality. There has to be a new value.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, that's great for us because it gives us a lot to work with and a lot of opportunity to really engage in incredibly different conversations.
Mm-hmm. So as we're looking at what's important in our culture? What's important in our personal lives? What do we want? What do we desire? How do we make this about what's giving people different options, communicating positive information, how to access spirituality, how to access sexuality? Some people are so shut down around their sexuality, they don't even know what they like anymore. They're like, oh, well, everyone told me that I was supposed to like this. I don't know. Seems okay. Seems kind of messy.
You know, I think it can, you know, outside of Outlook, I do something called 14 Black Poppies, which is personal, it's community renewal through arts and wellness practices. And one of the things that we specifically try to focus, we do workshops at the Happiness Institute on the third Saturday of every month from 10 until 12:30. 14blackpoppies.com.
You should see his tattoo. It's really cool. He's actually doing this work, doing these workshops, and then tattooing his flesh.
Yes. So 14 Black Poppies is arts and wellness workshops. And so for that, you know, one of the things for us is really, how do you make arts and wellness a daily practice? And how do you make it accessible? I think, you know, when we talk about creativity, I think creativity has been commoditized. When I talk about capitalism being the driving morality,
mm-hmm.
it even has crept into art, mm-hmm. and art is commodity, and commodity being the number one thing that is pushing cultural policy. So, you know, we've taken art to this place where it is only for the professionals and not for the community members.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really crucial that we actually cultivate a daily artistic practice among all people.
Right.
And once we do that, and it can be really simple, it can be, you know, the artist's way, 3 pages every morning.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? It could be just literally being creative and using your imagination and sitting for 30
Joseph
seconds.
Joseph Boyes said that everyone is an artist, and it's true. Everyone needs to cultivate what their creativity is. And it doesn't always have to be a fancy, smanchy art form. It can be cooking. It can be raising your child. But, you know, approaching it aesthetically, approaching it as a source of pleasure, approaching it as something that you've designed and it's your gift to the world is crucially important. Everyone has something to contribute. Absolutely everyone.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that even straight people, even normal people, even people who pretend to look normal like I do, you know, because I look totally straight and normal, right?
Right.
But I am a queer.
All right.
Swear to God. maybe not as queer as other people, but there's some pretty queer people in this world. So I really, there's no contest. So how are normal people responding to your work?
Normal.
What is normal?
Quote unquote normal. I think, you know, one of the things is that, you know, people find us really accessible. If you come to a workshop, if you come, we're going to be having an open house on February 19th here in San Francisco. If you come to anything that we do, you're going to find yourself feeling welcomed. You know, hospitality, personally, is a really lost art form.
Right.
It's a hugely lost art form. And we are really good at being... at doing hospitality well.
Cool.
Because
pluralism, right?
That's yeah, cool. We are here to communicate. We are here to learn, you know, not just mm-hmm. talk. We want to know what you think, what you feel, you know, what you can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, it's all about being real and being accessible.
And even as you can hear here, Anthony and I don't always agree on everything. And
no,
that's the lovely thing about pluralism and having a project team that has very different philosophies and perspectives right from the very beginning.
Yeah, so I want to quickly say we're looking for people to apply to be part of the ensemble for mm-hmm. the creative project.
OutlookTheater.org. Outlook Theater. theater.org.
And I want to make sure everyone can reach anthonyjuliuswilliams.com.
Yes, that's my website. You can learn about my show and all the other artistic work I've been
up to. Well, The God Project and Outlook Theater, thank you so much for being on Sexploration with Monica. Token straight guy Jess, thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Monica.
This is Sexploration with Monica. Thanks for listening.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.